The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with the assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Happy Thursday, everyone. I'm writer and editor and book hoarder Claire Williamson, and you're listening to A Little Bit Booked on Fresh FM. I have my first repeat guest with me today. Reader, writer, and poet Harold Coutts is back. Last time we had just done a speed read of half of the 2025 Booker Prize shortlist, and then for some reason we chose its two longest books, which is a terrible idea. But this time we've given ourselves a more realistic timeline and are tackling some of the books in the 2026 Occam New Zealand Book Awards shortlist before the category winners are announced on 13 May. Harold, thank you for coming back. I genuinely worried I would have scared you off.
No, thanks for having me back. I think I hounded you about this about once a month since we finished the Booker Prize. I was like, I want to do this again. It was so fun.
Yes, and I'm so happy that this time we get to do it with a New Zealand homegrown, you know, born, bred, and written selection of
books. And mostly books that are under 300 pages was really nice as well.
Yes, we did not pick any monsters to read this time around, which I did appreciate. Otherwise, other than the books we're about to talk about, have you been reading anything else riveting?
Yes, I've been reading Genius of Birds, but I think the author's name is Jennifer Ackerman, which is just really interesting, really insightful. It's not something I would have intentionally seeked out, but I must have put it on my TBR for some reason, and I was looking for like a treadmill book, and it was available in the library. But it's just really interesting. I'm learning a lot about how birds work, and even just like the physicalness of their like vocal cords and stuff is really fascinating. They can do so much more with theirs than we can ever do with ours. It's really cool.
I mean, my standard pull-out fact for people visiting New Zealand is that Tui have three voice boxes, which is a fact I was told from a friend at one point. But what other bird facts can you tell us? Quick, remember all of them.
New Caledonian crows are the only animal other than humans that have ever been found to use a tool that's a hook, which is pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mockingbirds, because obviously they mimic a lot and they can pick up a lot of things really quickly, that shows a very high level of intelligence, which has only been recently kind of cemented as scientific fact, which I also think is really cool.
That is really cool. What counts as a treadmill book for you?
If I can put it on my e-reader. That's it.
Okay. I was like, is there some special other quality of book? But no, fair enough.
Yeah, I just get bored on the treadmill, so I need to read something to keep me interested. So if I can get it on the e-reader, it's good to go.
Great. So for the Occams, which is one of the country's highest literary honors for books written by New Zealanders, there are four categories. There's the Medlicott Acorn Prize for Fiction, the Mary and Peter Biggs Award for Poetry, the Book Hub Award for Illustrated Nonfiction, and then a General Nonfiction Award. And each of those have their own prize funds that the winning authors get. There's also four awards for first-time authors and a Judge's Discretion Te Mura o Te Tuhi, a Maori language award, which sounds like it's not awarded every year. And so we picked one book each from fiction, poetry, and general nonfiction to talk about today. And those are Hood's Landing by Laura Vincent, Terrier Warrior by Anna Jackson for the poetry category, and This Compulsion in Us by Tina Makariti for general nonfiction. And in this economy, I don't think we could quite swing an illustrated nonfiction book.
No, unfortunately.
This time,
I did have a quick look through the pages when I was in New Books last time, and it's very beautiful.
The photography
is amazing. I didn't have a chance to read any of the introduction or anything, but it looked like a really well thought out collection. So.
Oh, that was for He Puawai, right?
Yes, sorry, yeah. I should have said, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen all of those shortlisted titles for the illustrated nonfiction floating around, and they do look very beautiful and very cool. We just didn't do one here.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Next time.
Congratulations to everybody who's been shortlisted.
Yay! Yes, no, that's true. So before we dive into the three books that we did pick, have you read anything else from the shortlisted titles?
Yes. So I've read, I believe, Before the Winter Ends by Kadra Muhammad is nominated, and I've read The Book of Guilt by Catherine Chidji.
Everywhere.
Both of which are incredible. Book of Guilt, I could kind of predict where it was going, but it was so well written that I didn't mind. Mm. I was kind of like, oh, yes, now that's happening. Really, really cool. I want to read everything else she's ever done. And then Before the Winter Ends by Kadra Muhammad. I know Kadra not very well, but I've met her a few times.
Ooh, name
she's
drop.
Really lovely. She is one of my favorite authors in the New Zealand scene at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Her poetry is really incredible, really moving. This book is such a good debut first novel. I'm really, really proud of her. I think everybody should go and read it. I can't speak highly enough of it. But we read Hood's Landing because I wanted to read something new.
Yes.
Congratulations to Catherine and Kadra as well. You've both written really incredible books. And if you could all win, you'd all win, you know?
That is the hard thing about awards, isn't it? Well, I've also read The Book of Guilt, which we are not going to talk about today. And I think we didn't pick because it's been so well reviewed and discussed lots of other places. And obviously, I've read Northbound by Naomi Arnold. And if you go way back to episode 2, I have a lovely interview with her about that book. And I've also read Jacinda Ardern's memoir, A Different Kind of Power, which again, I don't think we picked because that's been well discussed and debated in other platforms. So it's nice to pick a couple other options, including one from a truly indie press. I don't think I've read anything from Aporo Press before, which is what Hood's Landing was published in. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I believe they're a reasonably new press. I've known one of the founders, Damien, for years and years and years.
You just know everybody.
So it's really cool. Well, maybe. I am kind of name dropping. I don't know how these people would feel about that, but that's okay.
All press is good press.
Exactly. It's a really, it's a cool little startup. He's worked so hard for the last, 5 years in the New Zealand literary community. Really, really proud of him and everything he's achieved. I think it's so cool that their first novel, which I believe Hood's Landing is, being nominated for one of our biggest awards. That's just
incredible. An achievement. Well, should we start there then?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Hood's Landing, hang on, let me pull up the summary. So it's one of the few shortlisted novels, or books rather, in this year's awards from an indie publisher. And it's such a family portrait of a novel. So the initial premise is that Rita, the quote-unquote baby of the Gordon family at age 50, has come home for Christmas. The entire Gordon family is gathered for Christmas and her mother's birthday, but she is sitting on this immense kind of pressure and secret, which is that she has cancer and she doesn't know how to tell her family this. And that's kind of the premise. And you basically walk into a collection of family in-jokes. It's this entire fauna that's gathered together and they're just talking over each other and referencing people you don't know. And thank goodness there's a family tree in the front of the book. So I'm always like, wait, who's this person? Who's this person? Who's this person? But I just think this is one of the best kind of genuine, these are how large families actually are books I've read in a long time.
Yeah, that was really, really realistic. And I did almost find it a little off-putting at start because it did kind of feel like you'd just been dropped in and then it was like, here's these 15 people who've known each other for donkey's years and you've just met them and you're trying to figure everything out. And I was like, wait, what's going on?
Oh, it felt like you were an in-law.
Exactly. By the time I got into it, I was like, no, that was good. That is accurate. That's how it should be. And I already want to go back and read it again and kind of pick it apart a bit better, knowing who the characters are and where they're coming from and what they're talking about. So I think that was really successful.
And the other thing that I liked about this book is, so there's this kind of being told in quite a compressed timeline. There's this family gathering and things that are happening. But interspersed with it are these little vignettes from other women in their rural New Zealand community who have died over the past, you know, 30 years of different kinds of cancer, like all women. And I thought those were some of the, like, most brutally emotional short kind of stories, like, kind of each in of themselves, they're all short stories, that I have read in ages. And I remember one ended with, like, this beloved woman in the community had died of cancer, and the local school, like, named a prize cup in her honor. And then the last line of that story was something along the lines of, and neither of her children ever won it.
Yeah.
And I just went,
cussing.
Yeah.
I think it just really plugged at your heartstrings, right? Like, obviously, I think that's the first line of the book is Reed accounts the dead or something like that.
Pull it up. Yeah, it so is Reed accounted the dead.
There we go. The vignettes are like her, you know, going through everyone who's died in the community since she grew up. And obviously, it's between all the other chapters. And so sometimes I was kind of like, it took me out of what was going on with the actual Gordon family, but it was really good. And I feel like I've obviously never had a terminal illness, but when you are diagnosed with something like that, don't you go through and think about everyone who's passed away, you know?
Yeah.
And they were beautifully written. They were often very funny, very sad. Mm. It was a good mesh of both of those aspects that I think can make a novel really, really good. Laura's voice was also so strong.
Yes, it's her first novel. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I lied. She's published a cookbook, which I thought was like really way out of left field.
Yeah.
So no, I thought that was quite cool. What did you think of the recurring tarot card motif?
I loved it. I love a little woo-woo moment. and I like the idea that Irene, like, did that to make money for her family, and that's how they got by for so long. And then it became so entrenched in the rural community that everyone kind of relied on it for guidance. I thought that was really beautiful. And I think that's kind of the only thing, not the only thing, it's something you can only really have in a small community like that. It painted such a good picture of rural community, but quite a progressive rural community, which I don't think is often highlighted in New Zealand media.
So because we're going to feel like we're going to drop a whole bunch of people's names, Irene is their grandmother, and she's 102, I think, at the time of this book. I also like that the cover, which I'm holding up, kind of looks like the way they've designed it to me, looks a little bit like a tarot card, that kind of rectangle shape in the middle. I feel like I read somewhere that Laura actually did or had someone do actual tarot card draws for every card that comes up in the book, which I
think that's in the acknowledgements.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's where I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's awesome. And I believe the sentence was something along the lines of like, I paid attention to the readings, and the readings really showed me where the plot was going to go, something like that. Probably way more beautifully written than what I just said. But yeah, it was cool. And it was such a slow start for me, and I wasn't really sure on it for a while until there was one of the vignettes kind of focused on the twins a lot. And that really, I was like, okay, here we are. And then I kind of like retroactively loved everything I'd read, which is always a cool feeling. And then I had maybe like 40 pages left, but I was going out for the night and I knew it was going to be a big night, so I wasn't going to read tomorrow. So I brought a bag with me that just fit the book onto the bus so that I could finish reading it on the way to the party. That's how it was.
That is dedication. Did you have a favorite of the Gordon family?
It's hard to pick just one. I like both the twins.
Yeah.
I liked Buffy, and I did really like Irene as well.
Yeah, Irene was cool.
I think I can't narrow it down any further.
No, that's fair. As I'm looking at my, pulling up the family tree again, I liked Stevie, aka Flossie Doll.
Oh, yeah, Stevie was
they
cool.
They were very interesting, and maybe that's because, you know, they would be closer in age to us, kind of if we were at a large eclectic family gathering. But yeah, I enjoyed this book more than I thought I would based on the first 50 pages, where I was mostly just confused. and trying to figure out who everyone was and what was happening. But yeah, as you say, as it kind of went along and more of the vignettes and descriptions of all these women unfolded in this community, I found it much more of a page turner. I want to be in this family. I want to go over to this family for Christmas.
Same. Yeah. I want Irene to do my tarot reading. I want to, you know, I want to be at the vegan Christmas. I just,
God,
yeah.
Vegan Christmas.
I loved that moment. I was so like, I don't know, it just got the, we're family, we're going to take care of each other in these small little ways, but we're also going to lightly bully each other, you know? It was perfect.
Yes, no, that's true. Vegan Christmas, but weren't they going to include butter?
Yes. And Flossie Dog was just going to have to deal with it, which that made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, it's like we'll do a fake like tofu duck meat, but also we can't make a Christmas without butter because margarine is gross.
Yeah, it was so funny.
Yes, I did love that. And I also loved that all the dogs got renamed Roger. Whatever the eldest dog was.
That was cool.
So that was great. So it sounds like we both broadly really enjoyed this, and I would definitely read another novel from Laura Vincent.
Oh, 100%. I'm keeping my eyes open, you know?
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. Next book. Shall we go to poetry, or should we go to nonfiction?
Let's do poetry.
Okay. I'm going to rely on you a lot for this because you're way more in the know in the poetry scene than I am. But Terrier Warrior, A Poem in Five Parts, is Anna Jackson exploring thought and philosophy and life over the season so that it's split into five parts from summer to summer. And you'd already read this collection. And when we first kind of were debriefing about it, you said that it was so Anna. And so I'd love to know what you meant by that and kind of how it's fit into other things you've read by her, maybe.
Well, so I've also, not to name drop again, but I've met Anna. She was one of my lecturers at uni, and she published me in AU Poets 9. So it's hard to really explain it without having met her, I think. But it's just like, she's a very particular person. And I mean this in a really, really good way. Sometimes that can come across quite wrong. I just don't know how to explain it. It's just so Anna. It's all these thoughts and feelings that track with the way that she moves through the world. There's a lot of like focus on her hens, which her previous collection, Pastor and Flock, really focused on that a little bit.
I guess, is there a defining quality that you kind of take away from her work when you read it?
Quizzical, introspective.
Definitely introspective.
Thought-provoking. Kind of funny. I think that is kind of what I expect from Anna, and this really delivered on that. It's also interesting calling it a collection because it is technically just one large poem in five parts.
That's true. Maybe I misspoke there.
No, but like technically you would normally call it a poetry collection, right? And she's quite a seasoned poet at this point as well. She's been teaching poetry for a very, very long time. So she's obviously come at it with those decades of experience to make something that is like this. I've never read a collection quite like it either. So it was really unique. Especially as I do read a lot of our local poetry. And it did make me think a lot. The first time I read it, I was kind of like, I don't really know about this one. I did enjoy it, but I was like, yeah, okay. It's not my usual. But I read it again last night at one sitting, and I was kind of like, actually, no, this is cool. She's asking all these massive, massive questions, and it can get a little bit existential. And, you know, she poses the question of, is someone who terrorizes a terrier like someone who is a warrior, who worries a lot as a warrior, hence Terrier Warrior. And it gets quite deep and, you know, mournful at points, but then it ends quite jovial and happy and contented and calm. I don't know. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
No, you are making sense. I guess how do you approach reading a poem? Like for someone, let's say someone was inspired to pick up one of the shortlisted titles, and maybe that's Terrier Warrior, and they're not usually poetry people, you know. How would you recommend someone kind of like approach a poem?
I would just read it start to finish. Maybe that sounds a bit stupid, but
just I think kind of let it wash over you.
Yeah. Mm. Everyone's experience with a piece of art is going to be different. I think for me, what I want is I want to be inspired. I want to think about it. I want to sit with it. I want it to make me feel something. So that's what I'm looking for. If I don't have a connection to the poem, I'm going to enjoy it a lot less. Mm. But because Terrier Warrior kind of made me a little bit sad, but it also made me a little bit happy, and I was thinking all these existential thoughts and like big questions, and it made me want to write more. That's why I connected with it.
Mm.
But I've read some collections that have been like beautifully written in terms of like the writing, but they haven't like meant anything to me. Mm. So I haven't connected with them as much. Mm. I'm not going to name any names because I don't think that's fair. But,
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, just read it. Let it wash over you. Like you said, I think that's good.
Yeah, I guess what surprised me in it as someone who doesn't often read entire chapbooks of poetry was it had a very interesting kind of stream of consciousness feel to it. So it's not, you know, a poem in that it's like got a strict structure, you know, it's not a sonnet, there's no rhyme scheme, it feels very loose and free form. And the stream of consciousness comes a lot from the fact that most of the stanzas, cum paragraphs, start with "I thought," or "when I think of," or "I remembered." And actually love to...
"I felt" is a big one as well.
"I felt," yes. I'd love to have this digitally and just do a control F for the word "thought" or "think," just to see how many times it pops up. And it to me felt like, you know, kind of those thoughts you have in the liminal space before you go to bed, or you're doing a menial chore, and all of these things come to mind. And as you say, some of them kind of didn't really do anything for me as like individual segments, but then some of them I thought were really interesting and really beautiful. And I'm going to read one because I actually did remember what page it was on. And it was, "I thought this could be a new kind of biography, a biography of the dreams people have had about someone, which might tell you as much as anything else they would say about them, as much as their waking judgments of the person's character or their memory of how the person behaved at a party once." And it is always the weirdest moment when you wake up and you've had a dream and one of your friends is in it, and it's always like, oh, do I text them and tell them that they were in my dream? And then they're like, oh, well, what was I doing? And you're like, well, actually, you were sawing someone's hand off. And, yeah. You know, or so, you know, it's always something ridiculous. And imagine if those were all compiled and included in like a biography of someone's life. Mm. And I just thought that was cool. And it made me think about that for a while.
Yeah. And so I think you successfully read the poem, you know? Mm. It is quite unconventional for a piece of poetry, especially modern poetry, I think. Especially because it is so philosophical. And in the first segment, there's like heaps of direct quotes. Such and such said this. And then she riffs on that.
Yeah, well, she's got sources in the back of it. Poetry.
Like the notes section is really interesting as well.
And she talks about what she was thinking about of the notes and like how she learned about them. So I was like, that was kind of cool.
Mm. And I also like at one point in one of the first couple sections, she talks about how she was obsessed with taking pictures of squares and posting them on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the notes part for that segment, it's like, I stopped taking pictures of squares. That just really tickled me.
Squares. "I have stopped photographing squares, but you can probably still see my photographs with quotes from what I was reading on Instagram.com/poetry_was_a_grid/.
Yeah.
I admit, I have not looked at it. I probably should.
Neither have I. But I don't know. I just... that to me has kind of like a wholesomeness and a comedy to it, which I think is very essentially Anna.
Mm.
So it was great. I already can't wait to read it again.
I also love the cute little illustrations, which I recognize is not part of the poetry in itself, but adds to the kind of like again, you're just sitting at the kitchen table imagining and doodling kind of quality.
But packaging is so important for a book.
That's true.
An ugly cover. I know they say don't judge a book by its cover. I'm going to.
No, we all judge.
An ugly cover will put me off.
Yeah. So, yeah, all in all, I don't know that I could make, and I also haven't read anything else in the poetry section, so I don't know that I could make a judgment call on like where this sits in it, but I enjoyed stepping out of my comfort zone to read this and kind of, yeah, see what's happening with poetry and yeah.
I could see Tusiata Avia winning because she is perhaps our best poet we've ever had, in my opinion at least. I haven't read the collection yet. I'm saving it for like, I've got a couple projects I'm working on. It's going to be my reward. But I also would be quite happy if Anna won. I think something so unconventional and thought-provoking as this, it definitely deserves to be shortlisted. And I think it would be just a nice little moment if it won, you know?
And I think the last thing I want to say about it is that, again, I believe I read it in the acknowledgements. And I have become a person now who, whatever book I read, I almost always turn to the acknowledgements and read them first. And then I go read the book. And I don't know why I've started being into this habit.
I also just finished Tina's book yesterday. Mm. She says that in her acknowledgements, that she always reads the acknowledgements first before she reads a book. And she started doing that before she was a writer.
Mm.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah. That was not an intentional parallel. But these acknowledgements said, Anna says that she wrote this book in the 3 weeks she stayed at an intercity Auckland apartment during, you know, kind of some research leave. And I also found that quite interesting, that kind of the methodology almost of like shutting yourself away from, obviously I'm sure she went outside during those 3 weeks, but I don't know, maybe she didn't. And like kind of enclosing yourself away from the world and just sitting with your thoughts. And then, you know, what else do you have to do but, you know, think about a lot of things and just kind of seeing where your mind goes. I had to happen to turn again to another great page. If sometimes I think of thoughts as being behind the eyes, sometimes I think of them more as floating in a kind of cloud around the outside of my head.
It's cool, right? There's a lot of rumination on thoughts and how they are. And I love, sometimes she poses a question about like dreams and sleep and what that means for recharging. And if you know, how that can affect things. But then like, it's like, well, animals sleep like this and that doesn't change this for them, so why would that change it for us? I there's a lot of back and forth in it. It's really clever.
Yeah. So that was cool. And since we had our little seg with the acknowledgements, we can chat about the last book we read, which was Tina Macaretti's This Compulsion in Us, which is her first nonfiction book. And it is a collection of essays she's published over the years, compiled and re-edited, especially for this book. And a lot of them talk about her fuck-a-papa and literature and the fuck-a-papa of literature, a little bit of her rural childhood, and quite a bit of kind of academic discourse, which I wasn't necessarily expecting. I found this collection quite surprising. It wasn't what I was expecting. And individually, I found some essays quite cool. Like there was the one about what if they made, you know, how would you rethink New Zealand literature? And she had this extended metaphor about building a marae of the bones of New Zealand literature, but going back and including, you know, oral histories and Kō Whaewhai and all the different ways of storytelling that have been present in Aotearoa, and this really inclusive space that's kind of more than the big names that get tossed around. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I agree. It was quite unexpected for me. This is not the kind of book that I would seek normally. Most of the essays I read are quite academic. And there was a lot of academic elements, which I really enjoyed. There was the one essay on Maori cosmology and all the different names for like the Big Bang and stuff. That was really interesting. There was an essay on publishing statistics in New Zealand, which was really cool.
Yes, yes. No, that one is interesting.
But it definitely did read like a greatest hits album of essays, which is not my preferred method of consuming something.
It did feel like there were pieces missing.
Yes.
Because they came not, you know, they weren't even ordered. I don't think they were ordered sequentially in the book either, chronologically, in terms of like when they would have been published.
No, I quite like that though, because I think she wove a really good picture of a good story of her life and what had happened through those 10 years.
Yeah,
and
thematically they flowed, that's true.
Yeah, especially with the stuff with her dad, who like the postscript is almost entirely about him and his passing.
Mm.
I just found that very poignant. There was a lot of times where she said there were certain things that she didn't want to write about because it was too difficult for her and it would have been too difficult for him. But she did also still say a lot. And I just, throughout it all, there was such this incredible reverence for him. And obviously like respect and love, which she said multiple times that they had a rocky relationship and she went into it a lot at times. Mm. But even when she was talking about the worst moments of their relationship, you could tell that she still very much loved him and cared for him and respected him. And so having that kind of story woven through her life and her professional career and all these residents she's gone on to and having her children and stuff, it was beautiful. It was a really beautiful book. I'm like, again, I wouldn't have seeked it out, but I'm so glad that we read it.
Yeah, it was probably the one I struggled most with reading. Mm. I think that's just because what my expectations were and what the book were weren't immediately aligned, and that can kind of, that, you know, those are preconceptions you have to challenge as a reader as well.
Absolutely.
And kind of work through them and accept the book for what it is and what it's trying to do. I found the strongest pieces, or the ones that resonated most with me, were the ones where she was quite open and vulnerable about her upbringing and her parents and the personal journey she went on to rediscover a whole side of herself that she'd been shut out from many, many years. And the other was the ones where she spoke about teaching her students and how people from different backgrounds come with obviously different mindsets and stories behind them, and the questions about how do you make literature in New Zealand a representative and inclusive space. And I think that goes back to the essay that you mentioned that had all the publishing stats. And I wish I could cite them off the top of my head, but I feel like there was one where it was like disproportionately women are published in New Zealand. I'll look that up later. I'll check that. But the point of those statistics were who is published in New Zealand is not actually reflective of the proportionate demographics of who lives in Aotearoa today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should read some of her fiction.
I really want to now. I've read her daughter's book, but I haven't read anything else by Tina. But yeah, again, I really want to. Her narrative voice is really strong, even with nonfiction. I think she weaves a beautiful picture. The writing is thought-provoking and challenging, which I really like. And her perspective is just so cool, I think. She's obviously traveled a lot, and all of her like traveling literary experiences featured in this book, which was really, really cool. And she was really honest about how challenging that all was. I also love that she talked a lot about the effect her career and stress and life has had on her body.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was really unfortunate for her, but like very cool for someone to be so honest about.
Yes. And an interesting parallel with kind of Hood's Landing, I guess, which I didn't realize until I'd read all three of them. There is a perception, I think, that like you're supposed to try and have it all. And her family's experiences with what that did and didn't look like and how she tried to do it Yeah, and as you say, her experiences traveling, I think, to was it Germany and Canada, and the sense of how unsettled you can be when you can't even get something as simple as like a cup of tea,
mm-hmm.
and how unsettled that those little things can make you feel, and the what home and you know needs to feel like to her, where her place in the world is, and trying to negotiate that and find that. I did think those were things I resonated with. You know, particularly having lived abroad for many years, and there's always the like the transportive thing that you need to kind of keep you sane.
That's good. And my favorite part of the book is, and she touched on that a few times, is that writing for her is about connection. I thought found that really, really poignant, really, really beautiful. Because I agree, that's, you know, I started writing as a way to kind of figure out how I was feeling and express those feelings outwardly because I didn't know how to. And so for someone else, especially someone who's like been so lauded and successful and her whole career is writing in academia, for her to say that, I was like, cool, okay. Nice to know that I'm not alone in that experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was awesome. It's kind of, as you said, a good piece of art is something that made you feel something, kind of regardless of, I suppose, objective quality of brilliance. Like you can read the most beautifully crafted sonnet or whatever and be like, meh.
Yeah.
That was nice. I feel like that was nice is like the most bland praise you could give a piece of art.
For sure. And I'm really happy to say that all three of these books made me feel something. You know, they all had an impact on me. This month was a really good month of reading for me because of all three of these books.
Yay.
So, I'm really glad all three of them have been shortlisted, and hopefully they all do really well in the final round.
Yeah, so I was not going to make us take a stab at picking any category winners because, A, we were wrong last time with
the Justice for Susan Choi.
Justice for Susan Choi. She's in the shortlist for that other prize right now, so, you know, justice could come through. But since we didn't read most of the books in each category, I was going to let us off the hook for picking any winners, and so we'll just find out with everybody else on 13 May, which is when the Auckland Writers Festival wraps up. But I do have a couple of bookmarks to end us on, and one is that submissions for the Booker Children's Prize 2027 are now open, and there is a UK-wide competition to find three child judges between the ages of 8 and 12 to join the panel. And I wish I was between the ages of 8 and 12 for this particular
That's
award.
Beautiful.
I know,
yeah,
it's
I love
so
that.
Cool. So I guess anyone who's listening who might know someone with kids in the UK, they should go enter. I think that sounds
100%.
Great. And the other is that the 2026 Peter Wells Short Fiction Contest for Aotearoa LGBTQIA+ authors is open through Friday, 5 June. Which is a competition designed to encourage local authors to write material exploring their queer identity. And there's no theme this year, but the organizers would like to see the word fire and or delight used at least once somehow in the stories. And there's more details about that at samesamebutdifferent.co.nz.
I might enter that.
Yeah, you should enter that.
Yeah.
So thank you for reading along with me again, Harold, and we'll have to do it again next year or, you know, for another awards category. And maybe if we keep doing this long enough, we'll get to come be guest judges.
That would be a dream.
I know. How cool would that be? future goals. So you can find books and stuff from me at Accidental Tokyoite, and you can find Harold at...
My Instagram is Haralta Online. I think I have a Twitter with the same handle.
Do you use the Twitter anymore? The X?
Technically. I have it. I check it like once a day. I have my chapbook Longing is an AUP Poets 9, which you could probably get at every library in the country. And I have poems in Bat Apple, in Starling, in Stasis, in Poetry New Zealand Yearbook.
All the cool places.
Hopefully something else coming soon.
Yay! So if you have read any of these shortlisted books or anything else from the 2026 Occam's Long List or shortlist, we would love to know what you thought. So, I don't know, people can message me on Instagram or you can email me at alittlebitbookednz@gmail.com with opinions, because I love opinions.
Hit me up as well.
Yeah, hit us both up. Tell us if we were right or if we were wrong, if we should have read more of the books. Thanks for listening, and you've been a little bit booked.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.co.nz, for our contact.